Hey folks, and welcome to another episode of the Mountain Bikes Apart podcast. This is the show where we talk about everything mountain biking, from equipment to trail guides and everything in between. I'm Colin Gray, as always. I'm joined by Tom Bell. How are you doing, Tom?
Hi, Colin. Yeah, good to speak to you.
Good, good. So if you've been listening in on season three, you know that we're going through the winter season, just really keeping in touch, I suppose, just catching up every now and again on what we've been up to around training through the winter, planning for the sort of the warmer season, going through some of the stuff around your mountain biking career as well, Tommy, try to keep people up to date on how a professional mountain biker goes about their winter season coming into the summer. And also just any kit we've been playing around and stuff like that. So that's what we're going to go through, a few more of those types of updates over the next few episodes. This is no different. So really, first things first, Tom, what have you been up to? What's the last few weeks? I think the last time we talked was probably, was it before Christmas? It was, wasn't it?
I think it probably was. Yeah. I think it was. I think it's been a fair while. Actually,
so a good few weeks back. So what you been up to since Christmas then? What did your January look like?
Yeah. So as we sort of spoke about a little bit before we came on air, just struggling a little bit with motivation at times. Just through. I think that's something that quite a few people can obviously can probably identify with and empathise with. Yeah. Don't have the greatest weather in the UK at this time. I definitely prefer if it was sometimes a complete whiteout with snow and you could sort of go cross country skiing and all that kind of stuff. Whereas in the UK, we tend to get it right in the middle, where it's not sort of full on winter, but it's not warm enough to be comfortable, and you have to get a lot of rain, wind, that deadly combination. So sometimes it was a little bit of a struggle. And then I've also spent some time sort of sorting sponsors out and having my head in a few different things other than training, which sometimes makes it a bit difficult to go out and kind of do your best out there on the trails and roads. So motivation was a little bit of a problem, but other than that,
well, that makes me feel a little bit better that even though it's your I'm just an amateur. You're meant to be a professional at this, Tom. The pros still struggle at this a little bit. Like, the weather obviously plays a big part. Like, it's so much better getting out there in the sun and the warmth. But is there any kind of any patterns around your motivation, your ups and downs? Like, what makes you more enthusiastic about it, even if it's bad weather? What gets you out there?
Yeah, I mean, thinking about it, I'm not sure the weather was the kind of main reason the motivation waned a little bit. I think it's more what I alluded to before, in terms of having your head in other things and just maybe working on different parts that aren't directly related to training and racing. And when it's the off season, the media's quite quiet about the sport. You're not used to, or you're not racing sort of every other weekend. You don't feel like you're right in the thick of the sport. So sometimes like you're going out there for not much reason at all, kind of thing. But now once the kind of media gets sort of hyping the season up and there's more stuff going around, more excitement about the sport, I think that's where the kind of motivation comes back. And definitely before, in the winter, I haven't really struggled with the weather. It's not nice, don't get me wrong, but you just got to kind of suit up with the right equipment and get out there sometimes.
Yeah, the clothes makes a massive difference, doesn't it? If you get a decent pair of gloves, that gives you a pair of tights and stuff like that.
Exactly.
but that's interesting. So it's like, it's partly external motivation. It's partly knowing that the world cares about it, not just yourself.
It definitely is. Yeah, getting a bit of feedback from the world and that kind of thing. I mean, I started a YouTube channel about a year ago and kind of took it more seriously in the last 6 months. So kind of getting that feedback and having another kind of little reason to get out there and have stuff to produce video content around and just keep in touch with people has helped, definitely.
I didn't know you were doing a YouTube channel, actually. What's the, for everybody out there, what's the username for it? What's the address?
It's, I think the URL is... The YouTube URLs are a little bit funny. They have about three or four for every account, as you might know. But
you can you can usually get a name if you haven't set it up. We can put it in the show notes if you don't know offhand.
Yeah, I think it's youtube.com/c/TomBellAthlete.
Yeah, perfect. I think it's right. So. Cool. Yeah, I'll be able to find that. We can link to it as well in the show notes.
Exactly. Cool.
Show notes, by the way, for everybody out there, mountainbikesapart.com/304. So pop over there. We can link off to it. But I'm going to go and have a look at that actually, because I've not seen you riding.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So it's got some kind of training tips, training theory, as well as some vlogs from different bits of my training and, a few little riding shots and stuff. But what I want to do going forward this year is do some, course previews and talk about the different places that I'm racing and stuff. So
yeah, that'd be really cool.
Yeah, plenty to come.
We can probably get some of the audio off them onto the show.
Definitely.
As well.
That'd be great.
But it's funny you mentioned that around the motivation, because that's something that I think helps motivate me actually sometimes when I'm not really feeling the training, or I'm not really feeling even just to get out for a fun ride. Sometimes it's just easier to be lazy and just get on the Xbox and play something like that rather than get out there and enjoy the trails. And it's always, for me, it's always about the just getting off your ass, that first little movement, isn't it? Because once I'm out there, I love it. And there's no lack of motivation to stay out for hours. Even once you just get out into the garage and start packing your stuff up, then that's when this smile starts spreading across your face. But it's that first movement, isn't it? It's just standing up and making the decision, I'm going to go. And I find that the media stuff, like doing the podcast here, I do some YouTube stuff on mountain biking. Well, not so much these days, but I used to do a bit more. Or even just Strava, we talk about that. The fact that your ride is going public, people can see it. There's some kind of result of it other than just inside just yourself. It's funny that, isn't it? It's totally just showing off. It's ego, isn't it? A lot of it, partly. But there's something about that kind of putting it in context in the wider world, I think.
Definitely. I think I was going to mention that actually. It's funny that you brought up Strava, because that's definitely, it's like an accountability thing, isn't it? Where you know that if you don't go out, you know that a ride's not going to appear, and maybe you've got a certain amount of followers that are expecting to see something or have certain expectations of you. So that definitely helps. And then, like you said, just making that little first step, whether it's, like you said, just standing up or just putting your kit on or something like that. Once you get past that initial step, you kind of get in the flow of things, and hopefully before you know it, you're out the door, and then motivation isn't really a problem after that. It's you're never going to turn around and just ride home once you're in your kit and out on the bike. So
one thing I'm doing just now actually to try and keep motivated over the winter is I've got a chart on the wall. It sounds ridiculous, but I just got I got the kids' crayons and pens out and stuff, and I created an A probably 3 size piece of paper to go on the wall, where I've divided it up into days and I put down what I wanted to do. So at the moment I'm trying to do at least 3 days. So 3 days during the week of some kind of cardio, whether it's the bike or whether it's a run, and 3 days of strength training as well. So even just like a little 10-minute workout. I'm not doing going to the gym for half an hour or anything, but just picking up a kettlebell and doing 50 swings or 100 swings or doing some pull-ups or something like that. Cool. And I know it's not exactly a new approach, but I do find that helps me. Having that chart there and be able to tick off the boxes and see it building up over the weeks, having these little boxes filled in with whatever I've done that day, and seeing that, the kind of gamification of it, the streak, seeing that I have managed the last 3 weeks, I've managed my goal of 3 cardio, 3 strength every single week. There's loads of apps out there that I've tried to do that kind of stuff as well, but I love having the visual, just handmade thing up on the wall.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said for having a physical chart, or whether it's a notebook or something like that. Definitely, I find just if I've got thoughts and ideas, just writing them down in a notebook is kind of along the same lines, and it really, really helps.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything else you do around? I think we've talked a little bit about this before, but around goals for your gains, in terms of do you have measurements of your capability, in terms of times for certain segments, or whether it's your VO2 max, or do you measure anything in particular that helps your motivation so you can see the progress?
I think the main thing is using a power meter on the bikes, okay, and just because that's just an objective measure. It's almost like having the knowing what weight you're lifting in the gym. So definitely I have sort of certain hills, certain segments and certain durations. So maybe that's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, etc. Mm-hmm. And I have, I can then, you know, do some kind of tests and time trials and just see how my sort of power is changing over those key durations. So I think using a power meter for me is the main way to keep track of those metrics. Yeah.
Right. So how does that work? You say like over 5 minutes, I'm going to try and hold the highest power I can. Is that like, how do you measure it exactly?
Yeah, exactly. So whether that's trying to hold a certain wattage or whether it's just going out and going as hard as you can for 5 minutes and then kind of analyzing post ride what that power ended up being. Mm-hmm. And then seeing how that compares to, you know, how it was this time last year, maybe last month, that kind of thing.
Yeah, perfect. There's the on Zwift, it does is it your critical power that it...
Yeah, it could again? Be, is yeah.
That, so it's your power that they base everything else off. So it's the power that you can supposedly hold over a long period of time, like your maximum endurance power, possibly?
Yeah, it's probably I think it's functional threshold power.
That's so
it's,
FTP, yes. FTP
your test. One hour sort of, if you were doing a 1 hour time trial as hard as you could, that's typically what that number will reflect.
Perfect. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's an FTP test they do on that.
That's correct, yeah.
And that's the one you can see. Every time I do a training ride on Zwift right now, not every time, but maybe at least every second time, I'll get a little notification at the end that says something like, looks like your FTP is raised by a few. Do you want us to reset that? And I'm like, yeah,
cool.
So that's nice motivation because they're obviously testing. When I do a half hour, an hour ride, they've got some kind of algorithm in there which figures out your FTP from that. So that's, I like that. It's a good little extra bonus that I've found in the Zwift system.
Yeah, indeed.
Cool. Okay. I think that'd be a good episode in future, actually, is to think about, do a proper like 10-minute chat around the different types of metrics that you measure and how you can, like how, because I think that's something that really that's how I motivate myself a lot of time when I'm doing training, is how you measure progress. Because the thing that demotivates me is if I can't tell if it's working. You know, you put in half an hour of effort or an hour of effort or whatever, and you're like, did it matter? So I wonder, that would be a good one to go through, just sort of your thoughts around how you measure that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I completely agree as well with in terms of just if I don't have any numbers in front of me or any way to measure progress, it does feel kind of like it was a bit of a waste of time, even though of course it wasn't. But it'd be interesting to do one on Zwift as well. I've got as far as buying the Ant Plus dongle.
Oh yeah,
I haven't quite got round to using the software yet, but I definitely have that planned for the next kind of month just to try it out. So that would be a good to chat with you as an experienced Zwift user about that.
happy to I'm happy to evangelize about Zwift and my tax neo.
Nice.
Cool. Okay, let's keep that for a future one though. What about equipment? I want to cover like little bits of kit every now and again in these episodes as well. Is there anything you're trying out just now?
Yeah, well, just coming back to you trying to do a few more videos and stuff for the YouTube channel, I've been using I've had a GoPro for a little over a year, but I guess it's had a lot more use over the last 6 months or so. So that's been quite a nice thing to start using a little bit more and playing with some of the different features and that kind of thing, and just videoing me riding along and talking to the camera as well as the trails and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's one of the pieces of equipment I've been using.
Yeah, that's cool. So, which camera you're using there? Was it the Hero 4 3?
It's the Hero 4. It's the Hero 4 Black. Yeah. So not the Hero 5, the brand new one, fairly recent. Yeah.
That's one of my little grumbles at the moment, actually, because I bought a Hero 4. It was a black as well, I think, actually, Well, you can tell exactly when it was I bought it, because all you have to do is look up the release date of the Hero 5 and then subtract about 2 days. Because I had no idea. I did, you know, this is very unlike me as well, because I'm a total kit geek. So I tend to do far over research these types of things. But I've been wanting a GoPro for ages. And there was a few different things came together, which just meant that I was due a treat of some sort. And I was like, do you know what? Bugger it. I'm going to get a GoPro. That's what I've been wanting for ages. And I just press buy, because I just thought I've looked into these so much in the past that I know exactly what I want. This is what I want. And if I'd looked even slightly into it, I would have realized that the Hero 5 was coming out 2 days later. But I just didn't even know it existed. So I came out and I'm like, ah, because there's a few different things which are better about it by the looks of it, in terms of I use it a fair bit for filming in the studio here as well, for doing our podcasts, all our content stuff. So it's great for outdoors, obviously, but the Hero 5, the difference is that it doesn't need that big, massive, clear, see-through case that the Hero 4 has, which means that it's much easier to mount when you're not bothered about the, you know, the protection, about keeping it waterproof or dustproof and all that. And I can plug a mic into it externally much more easily and stuff as well. And apparently the stabilization is much better in the 5 as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's got, that's one of the main features, I think. It's got the inbuilt image stabilization, which I can't believe it took them to the 5th, or I guess it's not even the 5th iteration, it's probably kind of the 8th, when you've got Hero 4 Silver, Hero 4 Black, etc. I can't believe it took them that long in an action camera to put image stabilization in there. But yeah, I'm quite lusting after the 5 as well for some of those features that you mentioned, definitely.
You're right. You'd imagine that'd be one of the first things you'd talk about for an action camera, wouldn't it?
Exactly.
So interestingly, so with GoPros, I always wanted one. And, you know, a lot of people use them for mountain biking, for skiing, for anything action-based. But a lot of the time you just end up with, you know, same old cycling down a trail videos, which, you know, they're good fun to watch a few, but they get pretty boring after 30 seconds or a minute.
Sure.
How are you using it in a different way to make a decent footage? You said you're talking to the camera. Are you doing that while riding?
Yeah, exactly. So I just, you know, hold it out in front of me in a kind of typical vlog kind of way. And I've been looking at actually getting, you know, a kind of Canon G7X or some kind of vlogging, more sort of hardcore camera. But the GoPro actually, it's turned out okay. It's obviously a bit disconcerting sometimes when you can't see yourself in a monitor and frame it and that kind of thing. But once you get used to the kind of the way you hold it and distance from your face and all that kind of stuff, it works out okay. And I got a sort of furry kind of cover for it, just to protect the microphone from wind noise as I'm kind of riding along. So that's worked quite well.
Cool.
And yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to trying to edit it quite well, and just cut out any bits that keep it nice, and keep each clip nice and short, and just make sure that everything in there's got some kind of interest in there, because as you say, once you start letting it run for more than 30 seconds, it gets a bit dull, and like every other video you see online.
I think what you're saying there about the editing, obviously important, but the getting yourself in there as well, because I mean, it's great to see some trails and stuff like that, but your vlog, I'm looking forward to going and having a look at some of them, actually, because I've not found a lot of good sportsman vlogs. There's a lot of good vlogs out there, but there's not a lot of good ones around adventure, around exercise, around training, around mountain biking particularly. So I think you could do well with that. Getting your personality in it. Well, this is what we do in our work and business and podcasting, is like teaching people how to engage with an audience, how to create an audience and create fans. And it's all about personality. It's all about honesty. It's about showing the behind the scenes stuff. So if you can show, I mean, that's what we're trying to do a little bit in this season, isn't it? Is show like behind the scenes of how you run your career, like how you develop yourself as a pro mountain biker. So that's cool. You mentioned the Canon G7X there. What made you want one of those?
Well, I've just been kind of looking more as I've got more into the kind of vlogging style of things. I've just been kind of looking at what might be the best cameras to use. I've got a big DSLR that shoots nice video, and that's kind of the stuff I use if I'm just sat down and doing sort of talking head stuff. But obviously it's not easy to take that out on a ride unless you're using a backpack. So I just kind of wanted a camera that's got that magic combination of good image quality, a flip-up screen as well, and then being small enough that it can go in a jersey pocket kind of thing. So G7X seems to be the From what I've seen and looked around, I think that seems to be the best one, but it's just so bloody expensive.
No, it's just, it's funny you mention that one, because I've been doing a bit more research around vlogging as well, because we're doing a few with the podcasting work that we do here at the Podcast Host. The G7X comes up a lot with vlogs. And I think it's partly because of Casey Neistat is one of the most famous vloggers in the world.
Definitely, yeah.
And there's a few of his kind of followers and other people around as well. As Amy Schmitter is another really famous vlogger. She coaches vloggers and they all talk about the G7X. And I think it's one of those things where one bit of kit gets recommended by one high profile person and everyone else jumps on that.
Exactly. I think Canon are loving it probably.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably what helps keep the price of that G7X up. But you know what? I've been looking into it and there's tons of cameras which are much more good value, which are just as good. They have the same features. I mean, the big one with the G7X is the f-stop. So it's the brightness of the lens. And there's a lot of cameras out there. I've got the same. That basically means that you can do the bokeh, blurred background stuff, and that's what they love with the sort of vlogging community. So I've been looking around. Yeah, I might have to, but anyway, we can. It's interesting though, like if you're listening out there, you are doing videos around your mountain biking, around your sports, we'll put some links to these things on the show notes, because the G7X is definitely a good camera for this type of stuff, but I'll share a couple of the other ones I'm thinking about as well. Because GoPros are great, but they are limited in terms of there's no zoom, there's no monitor on it, so it's hard to do the framing, like you're saying. So they've got a definite context, as in when you're doing something active. But if you want to speak to the camera or like do a bit around you're building a bike or something and you want to film a bit of that type of stuff, definitely some other cameras out there. But yeah, I'll put that in the show notes and we'll see about that. Okay, right. Let's go on to, we'll tie up with a listener question. Unless there's anything else you want to add there, Tom, is there?
No, I think it's just, like I said, just been interesting. And like you said, putting your personality into the videos. And I've tried to be very vigilant in answering any questions that come in and just giving as much as advice and value as possible, really. So definitely looking forward to hearing from anyone that's got their own channel or any sort of mountain bike content. And I could definitely write a post on maybe some advice around vlogging while you're mountain biking or something like that as well. So if anyone wants any information on that, then be happy to offer any tips I've got.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Get a post out there about the kit that you can use to record your rides, as well as be able to actually just sort of teach people skills, or all the kit you could do. So that's a great idea. And also, if you're out there listening and you have your own channel, we'd love to check it out, we'd love to have a look at it. Happy to promote listener content. Like if you've got stuff out there which either teaches mountain biking or skills or talks about kit, kit reviews, trail reviews, that type of stuff, we'd love to put that out there, help you get it out there to more people. So yeah, send it on in. You can always email at Colin at I don't even know my own email address. Colin@mountainbikesapart.com. So email in there, or you can tweet us, obviously, at I'm the podcast host, and Tom is by Tom Bell, is that right, Tom?
That's correct, yeah,
by Tom Bell. Cool. Okay, so let's move on to listener question. I want to try and include at least one of these on every episode from now on, because we're getting loads of good stuff in. So I'm going to try and include loads of them from now on. So this is from Aaron. It turns out he's actually the dad of somebody. Do you remember we answered that question from the guy who was asking how you train to mountain biking when you're in a sort of urban setting? It was in Japan.
Oh, I do.
His name was CJ. This is his dad. So I'll read out the email first. It says, "Hi, Colin and Tom. I find your podcast absolutely fantastic. It's a treasure trove of information and it's been really helpful as my boys and I start up in the hobby." And I believe my eldest son CJ sent an email separately. So without further ado, here's an audio question for your next series. He doesn't think we've covered it, so he's keen to get our advice. So yeah, let's play the audio clip.
"Hi, Colin and Tom. My name is Aaron. I live in Japan. My two boys and I have started mountain biking recently. We're only beginners. I think my eldest son, CJ, has sent you a question recently as well by email. And my youngest boy, Kaz, just got a mountain bike about 3 months ago. So we're kind of starting out in the hobby, but I have a question. I've had a mountain bike for quite a while now. It's an L-sized frame, so it's fairly large, and the bar comes up quite high. And I am wondering how to protect my manhood in case of any accidents, slips, or falls. Is there any special clothing that you guys use, or is there a technique that you you try to avoid landing on the bar too hard, or anything else? Any other tips you could provide would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much for everything. Your podcast is fantastic. We're enjoying it every week, and look forward to the next season. See you later. Bye.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for that, Aaron. I had not pre-listened to that, so those sniggers were... there wasn't a laugh at the question, Aaron. It's a great question. It's just, just the topic, I suppose. Thank you very much for that, Aaron. I really appreciate you, genuinely appreciate you sending that in. I love getting audio questions on. And just for anyone else out there, if you want to do the same, so easy to just grab your phone, your smartphone, get out the voice recorder, just search, if you're on iOS, just search for, pull down on your screen, search voice, and it'll come up with a voice recorder. Android's the same, really. And you can just hit that record and share it with us. You can email it straight to colin@mountainbikespart.com from the app. So we'd love to get more of them. So yeah, thanks for sending that in, Aaron. Ways to protect your manhood on the bar, Tom. What's your first thoughts on that?
I would say probably it's to just... My first thought is to just work on some skills that will maybe stop you actually having that problem come up. So just making sure you ride trails that aren't too far over your kind of skill level, and then getting your weight back on the bike, just because a lot of beginner riders sometimes sit too far forward. And your center of gravity then is more over the front of the bike, and any kind of sort of jarring rocks and anything that's going to throw you forward is going to make your manhood go more towards the top tube in that way. So yeah, definitely working on some skills to avoid crashing and working your way up slowly through the kind of grades of trails is probably a good way to avoid that happening.
Yeah. It's what I was going through my head. It's one of those things, just to say up front, Aaron, this is not something that happens really once you've been riding a wee while. It's if you come off your bike, it tends to be you're either going much higher than that over the handlebars, mm-hmm. or you're going off the side or something like that. So certainly it's not something to worry about too much. I imagine from memory, the ways you end up like that are really more, it's nerves, isn't it? I think I remember ending up like that when I've been on sort of in the very early days, or been out with friends and they're nervous and you're kind of like edging down a trail and you're kind of, you're playing with the brakes a bit, and you end up kind of wussing out, I suppose, on one little section, and you try and put your feet down, and that's when the trouble starts, I think. It's when you put your feet down, because you try and put your feet down and obviously you're on the saddle, so you end up going forward, but you're on a rough bit of ground, so actually the bar will be much higher relative to the ground than your feet, so you end up putting your feet down in a hole or something or on a gradient.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's when your crotch hits the bar. The worst times are when, and I've seen so many friends do this, is they hit a rough bit of ground and it's like, oh, I don't want to do this bit, I'm just gonna walk over this. And what they do is they put their feet in the ground, but they're still on the bike, and they start edging forward with their hands on that. That is the worst. Do not do that. If you want to walk a bit of ground, then get off your bike.
Definitely.
And walk over it. There's no shame to that. By all means, walk hard bits until you can do it. But yeah, like you're saying, Tom, just try and ride, only be on your bike when it's a part of the terrain that you're relatively confident at. The only caveat to that is you're only going to improve by doing bits that you're kind of, that make you nervous, aren't you? Just
yeah,
above
you are.
Your level.
Yeah, exactly. And I think just being maybe looking at certain sections that you're unsure of before you actually ride them, they can be challenging, definitely, and maybe something that you haven't tackled before, but just having having a good idea of whether it's achievable or just completely out of your league is probably a good thing. But yeah. And as well, just addressing Aaron's question about clothing, I don't think there's any sort of specific clothing you could use that would help in that way. You've obviously got padded cycling shorts, so maybe they kind of double up as a bit of a top tube protector. But like you just said, Colin, I think it doesn't really happen that often if you fall off or crash. If it is becoming a real issue, it might be that the frame's just too big. Aaron mentioned that it was a size large. So yeah. if the saddle and seat post haven't got enough height sort of above that top tube, that might be an issue. So yeah. if kind of bike fit wasn't a kind of top priority when buying this bike, maybe that might be something to consider a little bit further down the line if you eventually upgrade the bike.
Yeah, and you get bikes that actually the top tube is much more angled, so it's way out of the way, isn't it? Like even for a large bike, it's still quite low or it angles down towards the saddle.
Yeah.
So if it's something that makes you nervous, then by all means, choose your bike based on that. The last thing I would say just popped into my head as well is that I feel like as well the reasons or the times that happens is when you're going too slow, actually. And a lot of people, certainly in the beginner days, they think that going slower makes them safer, but actually speed helps smooth out a ride. It helps you out with a lot of a lot of obstacles, so drops, rough stuff are easier when you're going a bit faster, and obviously you have to match that with your skills. You don't want to go so fast that you're going to come off, but just try and carry a little bit more speed and don't be quite so nervous with the speed, and you actually can go over stuff much more smoothly. And just like Tom, like you said there as well, Tom, hang over the back of the bike a little bit while you're going faster, and it keeps the bike a bit more stable. Cool. Okay, anything else to add to that, Tom, or is that I think that's about it, isn't it?
I think that's as much as I could say on that topic. Indeed. Interesting. We definitely haven't covered it before, so it was definitely a unique question.
Yeah, for sure. And it was a good one, Aaron. Thanks for sending that in again.
Thank you.
Okay, let's tie up the episode. Good to speak to you again, Tom. Let's ask again, as always, for feedback, because I'd love to get more questions in. We've had some great questions in the last little while, but always good to get more in. And if you can do it in an audio format, even better. Let us know what you think. Give us any kind of contact. Great to know people are out there. Tweet me at the podcast host. You can find us on Facebook, Facebook page, facebook.com/mountainbikesapart. Where else? Email Colin@mountainbikesapart. And Tom, where are you again on Twitter?
That's by Tom Bell, so BYTOMBELL.
Great. And if you can review us on iTunes, that always helps us get out to more people as well. So we're going to continue on with this format for the next few episodes, at least probably into March or April time when the season starts off. We might get back into a more planned out season, try to do a bit more of the education side of things at that point. Did you laugh there? Because I'm not planning this out. We're just winging it, Tom.
No, I think that's I think that's of both of us, actually. So it'd be good to I'm definitely enjoying the just general catch up, and especially the listener questions as well.
Yeah,
we'll definitely get back to some educational ones as well, I think.
Well, it'd be interesting to hear actually what listeners think. So yeah, if you're out there listening, let us know what you think, what you prefer, because these are good fun, just having a chat actually and just catching up what we've been doing. So if this is actually what you like, then yeah, do let us know. Okay, but that'll do it for this week. We'll see you next time around. Thanks as always for listening. We'll talk.